This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. As more people in the United States and around the world continue protests to combat racism, racial acts against blacks in America continue to take place openly and behind the scenes. Now crossing over to NASCAR racing. In response, NASCAR drivers put on a dramatic show of support for fellow driver Bubba Wallace on Monday. Wallace, NASCAR's only black driver, was pushed to the starting line by all of the racist drivers after NASCAR stepped up security for the rain-delayed Geico 500 after a noose was found in the driver's garage at Talladega on Saturday. The vocal supporter of Black Lives Matter, Wallace, was the target of a racial attack a day earlier with the noose, a symbol connected to lynching in America's slave history, was left in his team's stall. The NASCAR president, Steve Phelps, vowed to use all available resources to uncover the identity of the person responsible for the racist attack and have them banned from the sport for life. Earlier on Monday, the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Northern District of Alabama said the FBI is reviewing the situation surrounding the noose to determine whether there are violations of federal law. U.S. President Donald Trump on Monday said that he opposed removing the towering statue of former President Theodore Roosevelt from outside New York's American Museum of Natural History. The move was announced by the museum Sunday and comes amid anti-racism protests across the United States and the world after the death of an unarmed black man, George Floyd, in police custody on May 25th in the United States. The statue shows Roosevelt on a horse with a Native American man and an African man by his side. Roosevelt, a Republican like Trump, was a U.S. president from 1901 to 1909. Many critics have said that Roosevelt's statue symbolizes racial discrimination and colonial expansion. This is VOA News. Globally, the number of deaths from COVID-19 is more than 471,000. The U.S. has the highest number of deaths at more than 120,000, and the number of infections globally is more than 9 million, more than 2.3 million in the U.S. Mexico's daily death toll from coronavirus passed Brazil Sunday amid concerns that Latin America's second biggest economy is not doing enough to flatten the increasing infection rate. It's Mexico reported 1,044 additional deaths from the coronavirus. In comparison, according to Reuters, Brazil reported an additional 641 deaths. Still, Brazil remains second behind the United States in the number of overall deaths and infections. Millions across Mexico have been in quarantine since mid-March, and there are fears that the country's infection curve has not flattened since in June, quarantine restrictions were eased that provided for some factories, offices, and shops to open. Now, with an increasing number of infections, locals fear quarantine fatigue is driving the trend as people head to work out of necessity. North and South Korea are set to mark the 70th anniversary of the start of the 1950 to 1953 Korean War Thursday. The conflict started in 1950 when communist North Korean troops launched a surprise attack across the 38th parallel into South Korea. U.S.-led United Nations forces battled Chinese and Soviet-backed North Korea, in which 3 million soldiers and civilians were killed and 5 million became refugees. The Korean War ended roughly where it started, near the 38th parallel. The armistice signed on July 27, 1953, stipulated that both sides withdraw their forces 2 kilometers from there to form a demilitarized zone. This zone remains the world's most heavily fortified frontier, with about 1 million troops stationed on each side. A North Korean defector group says that it's launched anti-Pyongyang leaflets towards the North, even as Pyongyang blew up an inter-Korean liaison office last week to show its displeasure against the defectors in South Korea for not stopping them from sending the leaflets. In a 7-second video clip provided by the group Fighters for Free North Korea, defectors were seen launching a giant balloon carrying a package of leaflets and a poster bearing photographs of leader Kim Jong-un, as well as his sister, Kim Yo-jong, with anti-Pyongyang messages. The group said that they sent off 20 balloons carrying 500,000 leaflets, $1 bills, and SD cards Monday night in the inter-Korean border area. Find more at voanews.com. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News. We'll be right back.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, June 23rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Malawians are voting today in a special court order presidential election.
As a government that respects the rule of law, we believe it is important for every Malawian to exercise their right to vote for a person whom they want to be the president for the next 5 years.
A spokesperson says the ICC is not being political in the case of former Ivory Coast President Laurent Gbagbo. Free cooked meals for needy youth in Liberia during coronavirus emergency. An outrage in Sierra Leone over a horrendous sex crime. And Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni supports virtual campaigning for the country's 2021 presidential election.
This would remove the uncertainty that will be created by the postponement of the elections, but also ensure that the elections are held safely. I call upon Ugandans to support this option.
And today is International Widows Day with a focus on Kenya. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Malawians are voting today, Tuesday, in a special court order presidential election. Voters will choose between incumbent President Arthur Peter Mutharika of the governing Democratic Progressive Party, the DPP, and Lazarus Chakwera of the main opposition Malawi Congress Party, the MCP. Malawi's Constitutional Court ordered the vote after nullifying the results of the 2019 presidential vote due to irregularities. Information Minister Mark Botomani says the government is confident that the Electoral Commission can organize a credible presidential rerun. His comments follow reports of politically motivated violence in parts of the country. Botomani tells VOA's Peter Clotty that security agencies will ensure that the poll remains peaceful.
As a government that respects the rule of law, we believe it is important for every Malawian to exercise their right to vote for a person whom they want to be the president for the next 5 years. We have had a very protracted campaign period. Every candidate has been going around, you know, to look for votes. And the message has gone to Malawians. And it is now the opportunity for Malawians to choose whom they believe can lead them for the next 5 years. So our message to people, of Malawi, is that this is the time to reflect. Because we need to build on the development initiatives that have taken place, especially in the last 6 years. We need to build on that. We need to build, continue building the peace that we have enjoyed for a long time. And we need to, you know, to focus on building this country. So it is very important. It's a very important period. And our message is that of peace, tranquility, and unity for all the people of Malawi.
Mark, we understand that Malawi has always remained peaceful during elections. However, during the activities leading up to the last election, there were politically related violence here and there. What is the government doing this time around on Tuesday to ensure that prospective voters are protected and not intimidated by anybody irrespective of their political inclination?
We have no doubt that Malawi will remain stable, will remain peaceful, will continue to enjoy the peace that we have enjoyed for more than 50 years. And we have no doubt that even when Malawians are going to vote, we'll still be on the same pace of peace. Of course, you know, as expected, there have been a lot of bickerings here and there. There's some pockets of violence happening in some parts of the country. But I think this is what should not, distract us. We believe that all political leaders understand the need for the country to be peaceful and united during this time. Unfortunately, we have just been receiving some reports that in the opposition strongholds in the central region, there are some monitors of the ruling DPP that have been chased and some of them harassed. And the security agencies are taking action on the same. And just assure Malawians that we have the Malawi police and the Malawi army all over the country deployed, and they will ensure that peace is maintained.
Now, so as a government, have you put in measures in terms of support to the Malawi Electoral Commission to ensure that Tuesday's election is transparent and credible.
Yes, government has always supported the Malawi Electoral Commission. As a matter of fact, we have been funding the Malawi Electoral Commission, and though there's a little bit of a deficit, but that is going to be managed as government. And we have also supported them in terms of security, movement of ballot papers from the central point, and that is Lilongwe, to all over the country. We've been supporting that, and we've been able to deploy security agencies, the Malawi Police and the Malawi Army, virtually in each and every center of the country. There are about 5,002 centers across the country, and that's every one of those centers has at least two security personnel manning them. So security for the ballot papers and indeed security for the people is assured, and government will continue to be vigilant on the same.
Mark Botomani is Malawi's information minister. He was speaking with VOA's Peter Clotty from the capital, Lilongwe. Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni says coronavirus restrictions introduced 3 months ago for commercial transport known as boda bodas, religious gatherings, and schools will remain in place. Speaking to the country on Monday, Mr. Museveni called on Ugandans to support the decision of the Electoral Commission to have virtual campaigns for the 2021 presidential election. Mugume Davis Rakarinji has more from Kampala.
While addressing the nation this Monday evening, President Yoweri Kaguta Museveni said it is very risky to totally lift the lockdown measures introduced in March this year to contain the spread of COVID-19. Schools, bars, places of worship, political gatherings, sports events and entertainment, as well as border crossings, will remain closed as the government avoids a surge in cases of coronavirus disease.
The only safe activities that can be reopened now are the public passenger transport and private cars in some of the 33 border districts that do not have the coronavirus. So in these ones, we are going to allow now public vehicles to move and also private vehicles to move, but with the safeguards that are applying in the whole country.
Also, private vehicles previously allowed to carry only 3 people, we now carry 4 passengers. President Museveni said the government may reintroduce a total lockdown if people become complacent and fail to adhere to prevention measures, such as wearing face masks whenever they appear in public. He said citizens should support the Electoral Commission decision, asking politicians to rely on electronic media to canvass for votes.
The gathering for the election themselves can be safely managed with hand washing, social distancing. This would remove the uncertainty that would be created by the postponement of the elections, but also ensure that the elections are held safely. I call upon Ugandans to support this option because it can work if all concerned do the assignment diligently.
Some politicians and analysts have said a ban on public campaigns will benefit the ruling government. Joel Senyonyi, the spokesperson of the People Power Movement, a political pressure group headed by opposition politician Robert Chagwanyi, says they will challenge the Electoral Commission decision in courts of law.
We do not want in any way to give the virus breathing space. But that doesn't mean that COVID-19 should be used by the government as an excuse to trample on our rights, including the right to vote for the candidates of our choice, the right to participate in a free and fair electoral process. And a free and fair electoral process includes the campaign period where candidates can go out there and interact with the people, convince them about what it is that they are able to do manifesto-wise and all of that.
774 people have tested positive for COVID-19 in Uganda, although 631 patients have since been treated and recovered, and the country has not recorded any coronavirus-related death. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji, Kampala, Uganda.
A spokesperson for the International Criminal Court, the ICC, says the court is not being political in the case of former Ivory Coast President Laurent Gbagbo and former Ivorian Youth Minister Charles Blaise Goudé. The two were acquitted last year, but since then they have remained in Belgium and not being able to return to Ivory Coast. Yesterday, Monday, the ICC prosecutor asked the court to overturn the acquittal on the grounds that it was legally and procedurally defective. The new wrangle comes as Cote d'Ivoire is preparing to hold a presidential election in October this year. ICC spokesperson Fadi El Abdallah says it is possible for Mr. Babo to change his residency with the approval of the court and any country that might want to receive him.
The trial chamber at the ICC had acquitted Mr. Laurent Gbagbo. The prosecutor, Madame Fatou Bensouda, had appealed the decision on the acquittal. And thus, the appeal goes before the appeals chamber of the ICC, which is composed of 5 judges different from the judges that have looked at the case at previous stages of the proceedings. And these 5 judges will decide whether the acquittal decision is correct or it has suffered from any errors in law or in facts. And thus, the appeals chamber can decide whether to confirm the decision or to reverse it.
So then, let me ask, what is the reason for the ICC seeking a review of the case?
Well, again, it's not a review. It is an appeal that is presented by the prosecutor and not by the ICC as a court. It's by the prosecutor who submitted an appeal against the acquittal. In the legal system, there are several levels of chambers, let's say. So you have the first level, which is pretrial for us. Then you have the trial chamber before which there is a trial that happens. And then you have the appeals chamber. And I think it is the same in the U.S. or in many other countries. There are also several levels. In some countries, there is a Supreme Court or Cour de Cassation in French system and so on. Before the ICC, we have, as I said, the trial chamber. And then if whether the defense or the prosecutor do not agree with the trial chamber's decision, then they can appeal the decision before the appeals chamber. And then it is for the appeals chamber, as I said, composed of 5 judges, to decide whether the decision of the trial chamber should be confirmed or reversed.
How soon then before the appeal is decided? Because as you know, Ivory Coast is preparing for a presidential election in October this year. And Mr. Babo's supporters, based on what I've read, would like for him to return home and perhaps represent his party.
Well, you know, political considerations cannot be considered by a court of law. The judges will take the time that is necessary for their deliberations, for the preparation of their judgment, and then it will be made public. In the meanwhile, it might be good to remind the listeners that Mr. Gbagbo, he was acquitted. He has been released from the ICC detention center. There are some conditions that are imposed on him. But if he wishes to change his residency, it is possible to do that with the approval of the court and, of course, with the approval of the state that would be receiving him eventually to implement the conditions that are imposed on his release. But there is no political intervention from the ICC.
Abdallah, thank you very much again. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Fadi El Abdallah is spokesperson for the International Criminal Court. He was speaking with us from The Hague. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, June 23rd. Amid this week's tragic news that a 5-year-old girl in Sierra Leone was sexually assaulted before she was killed, activists and lawyers are once again protesting. Despite the government's declaration of a state of emergency last year on the high number of rape cases in the country, the president of the Sierra Leone Lawyers Association, Fatmata Sori, tells Ricky Schreier that there has been a lot of talk about changes within the system, but very little has changed for women and girls seeking justice.
The complaints are still the same so far as investigation not being as robust as it should be, complaints against the police, worry and concern about the judiciary, and delay in prosecution of the cases. But all of these things have factors which are limiting to it. We still don't have a safe, we don't have robust witness protection programs, we don't have a halfway house, we don't have so many things in the fight against certain gender-based violence, and yet we keep making news for very, very awful stories. One of these is the loss of life for this young girl. We made progress as anyone would hope.
You said there still is no forensic lab, and there are no rape kits in the country still.
None at all, absolutely. So even today, when they were protesting the death of this girl, one of the things that the activists were clamoring for was the forensic lab, because it aids the prosecution of these cases.
Do you think that the reason sometimes that there is no justice when it comes to these cases, as you said, there can be laws, but maybe the justice is still not met. Is that a reflection of the fact that there needs to be more women with political formal power or economic power?
It's a combination of a whole lot of factors. Mm-hmm. But I agree that the females clearly need a robust economic empowerment. And the reason why I say that is most women and their families and children find themselves in communities and in spaces where there's been repeated abuse and they find it difficult to remove themselves from those spaces because they cannot afford it. And most women and girls are not enlightened to know, first of all, when there is a violation of their rights, when there's been sexual penetration, and most people are fearful of coming forward. The other issue we contend with is the fact that there has to be equality before the law. It doesn't matter your influence, your connection, who you know and who you don't know, but you become an offense, especially in rape or sexual penetration. You should face this to the penalty pool for the law. We need proper systems in our court, the proper courtroom. And I know I've heard the Chief Justice say that he's working on developing a courtroom, which is welcoming, but we just don't need one courtroom. We're going to need courtrooms that are gender sensitive across the country. Because if we're just to have it in Freetown and don't have it in Bow and Panama, then we'll still be in the same predicament again and again. And considering the number of cases that are coming up, just one courtroom will mean delay injustice again, because it means there are hundreds of cases that have to be heard, and there is only one courtroom to deal with sexual penetration, and there probably is only one judge at a time that will be speaking on these matters. You can imagine the backlog that would happen because these cases keep recurring and happening on the same day.
That was Fatmata Suri, president of the Sierra Leone Lawyers Association. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from the Sierra Leone capital, Freetown. Liberian President George Weah on Monday extended by 30 days the country's coronavirus state of emergency. The original emergency expired yesterday, Monday. Meanwhile, homeless youth in the capital, Monrovia, have been smiling lately as they have been receiving free cooked meals provided by the Indian Consulate in Monrovia since the beginning of the COVID-19 emergency. Most of them are disadvantaged young people, commonly referred to as Zogos. Moses Gazier will report from Monrovia.
We are here at the site of one of the most feared environments in the Liberian capital, Monrovia. Many young women and men, as well as their children, are keen to get a plate of food and a pot of water. Among them are some of the most feared and dangerous criminals and drug addicts referred to by the local people as Zogos. The Indian Consulate in Monrovia, led by its Honorary Consul General, Ajit Singh Shashdeva, popularly known as Jetty, has undertaken this initiative of providing food to these young men and women and their families.
In a normal day, from Monday to Friday, there are around about 700 here, because the people come from all around here, right? Saturdays and Sundays, the strength is around about 500.
Despite their condition, they are not without a leader. Young Mohammed Famune, referred to as Five Stars, is the leader of the disadvantaged young men and women in this area.
Men, I get 365 men. Women, I get close to 120. Sometimes NGO or other people come and help all the food. Start cooking. You can cook. You're not Sunday, but everybody can also for themselves. For that time, they can start coming here. The rest can get it all. We can cook it maybe about 10. We have their quarantine. How we gonna cook it?
Some of the young people told me they are grateful for the free meals they are receiving. They even call it a blessing from God.
They think what Jadi doing is very, very good. Blessing from God, because at least now we're able to, you know, make ends to meet. To learn what you get instead of, you know, always putting all behind food. You can go and buy soap, clothes, other things, transport yourself some places.
See, what you doing for us? We now want to pay you. Our own Liberian citizens, what we are expecting them to do for the senator now, the representative, that they want to do, they want to check it doing for us. But they're not able.
Honorary Council General Shashdeva told VOA hunger he has seen among the vulnerable young people was one of his key motivation behind his decision to provide the free meals.
The hunger I've seen among the Zugos, I have never seen that much amount of hunger. I've been living in Liberia for the last 34 years of my life. I've never seen people hungry for a plate of food. Hungry man is an angry man. And once they don't have food, they will run around in crowds, in crowded situation, and they will be, you know, vulnerable in the society.
Coronavirus safety protocols were active in place at the distribution sites, including the compulsory wearing of masks. Shashdeva says it is one of the requirements for getting a plate of food.
I made around over maybe 7,000 masks, locally handmade masks, are distributed to everybody. When we are distributing food, it is compulsory you must have a mask.
In a way, this initiative might be a win for residents of Monrovia and environs, because without aid, some of these young people will spend their nights terrorizing residents to feed themselves. Moses Gazil, VOA News. Monrovia.
Widows in Africa, especially Kenya, often face traumatic experiences, including rejection after losing their husbands. On this International Widows Day, the United Nations says millions of widows and their dependents face injustices and poverty. Maureen Otiabo reports from Nairobi.
International Widows Day is a United Nations ratified day of action to address the poverty and injustice faced by millions of widows and their dependents in many countries across the world. In Kenya, most women who have lost their husbands often lose their property to in-laws. Gladys Some is a widow who lost her husband 5 years ago. She says everything they had invested in with the husband was taken away by her sisters-in-law, who claimed all the property belonged to the brother and that she was to hand over.
It was either I give the burial permit or they take away my son and in exchange, because the burial permit would be able to allow them to probably process any properties that my husband had. And they never wanted us anymore. Could not even sleep at my husband's home that particular day. So we left to go back to our home in Nairobi. So they said they wanted all the documents that belonged to my late husband. So I had to leave everything that we had done in that homestead for those people. In fact, to date, I have never gone back where my husband's body was laid.
According to Lumba Foundation, the plight of widows around the world estimates that there are more than 245 million widows worldwide, 115 million of whom live in poverty and suffer from social stigmatization and economic denial purely because they lost their husbands. Mrs. Some said that the rejection she faced from her in-laws was because she did not belong to the same community with her husband.
They always looked at me as an outsider, as not belonging. And so even those who tried to collaborate with me, like my sister-in-law, their eldest sister, she was actually branded a traitor. You know, it was quite very, very difficult. Yes, you are really looked at as a stranger, especially if you come from another community. And so I sometimes feel probably if I was from the same community as my husband, from the same tribe, probably things would have been different.
Roselyn Omolo has been a widow for 11 years, and she says the African society is harsh on widows, and most of them have been denied right to own husband's property.
The assumption in most African family settings is that the family of your husband still has rights over you, they still own you, and they're still able to dictate what you can and what you cannot do. It is especially sad for the rural women who do not have a legal support system. My journey has been fraught with difficulties. When you make a decision, there's a lot of judgment. There is a lot of opposition to your decision. Your children are never treated like the other children whose parents, especially whose fathers, are alive.
The International Widows Day seeks to stop these discriminations and educate communities regarding the needs of vulnerable women such as widows and empower them to have access to health care and education for their children. Today, governments across the world are reminded to ensure that the rights of widows are included in international laws and that judicial system uphold them. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
And that's it for this Tuesday, June 23rd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, hoping that you will have a very good day.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bubu music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat and dumbolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.